Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is January 27th. I just checked this computer to see what day it was. I'm coming to you live from this
dentist office.
Yeah, this is the dentist office here at Vice in Brooklyn. We fix all your teeth. We give you, like, we give you grills. We give you new crowns. Like, if you have, like, some, if you need fillings, we got you.
We tell you to floss twice a day.
At least twice a day.
It's good for you.
I try to floss all the time, every day.
All day.
I floss nonstop.
Always be flossing. You know, ABF. It's a Glengarry Glen Ross.
Right, exactly.
You know, kind of thing. Like, always be flossing.
That's us. Joining us, Danielle Rienda.
Hi, everybody.
Also joining us, Tim Barnes.
What am I doing here?
Yay!
Tim Barnes, our producer, our engineer, is joining us. Patrick couldn't be here with us, and I didn't know that until because of failure. Not because Patrick didn't like put in for time off correctly. I fucked up and forgot, and so I was like, oh shit, we need another guest because of the way that our Twitch stream looks has another window on it. And so Tim... Let's
might as well face me, yeah.
Tim is doing the work right now being here and you know, guesting for us, but also mixing the audio.
Thank you for joining us, Tim.
I'm very excited to be here.
Moments before you got here, you were exuberant or anxious.
About the human-pig hybrid.
The combination human-pig hybrid. The chimera.
Pigman.
Yes.
Chimeras were historically believed to guard humans.
Well, that's
somewhere
cool.
along the line, they became like villains in D&D.
Well, this chimera actually kind of does that. It's maybe not guarding, but it's aiding humans.
Because
the point of this pig-human hybrid
is to be cut open and to have organs torn from it.
To give its organs to you.
I do that in Dragon's Dogma all the time. I kill a chimera and I'm like, yo, I need that heart to put in this sword to make it better.
Yeah.
For some reason.
You know.
What was this? How did you hear this story?
I was doing a voiceover recording yesterday, and someone just brought it up from their Twitter feed as small talk conversation. And
science
now,
is weird.
It's very weird, and I feel so casual about it too. It's not even. I'm gonna forget about it tomorrow.
You're gonna forget tomorrow that there is a thing alive right now that is half human, half pig. We all know, of course, that pigs and humans are like cousins. Or
and this also depends on when you believe life begins. So
true.
Yeah.
It's just an embryo right now.
It's just an embryo
it's
right now.
It's just an embryo.
Yeah.
But it's going to be an
so we need to see how Mike Pence feels about this. Ultimately, I think this will...
Mike Pence...
As a human-pig hybrid, Mike Pence might have some serious feelings about this concept.
Yeah.
This is not the only science news. I woke up and was late to work today because I was reading about the way that they made hydrogen into a metal. The headline said, like, oh, they turned hydrogen into steel. But that's a lie. They didn't do that. They made it, like, really cold and really pressurized and made it, like, as hard as steel. They made it a metallic instead of a gas or a liquid or whatever.
And hydrogen metal, my favorite rock genre.
Nice. Yes, hydrogen metal.
Yes, it's super hot.
It's, yeah.
It's, no, that's not good. What's the other?
It's super chill, actually. Yeah.
You know,
it's
like
the chillest metal.
Did you know that, like, 98% of metal is made up of hydrogen metal? But, like, we just don't, it's not the kind we need to live. We need oxygen metal to live.
Right, that's the kind we need.
These are all bad.
Yeah, we all need a lot of elements for our
But that shit's crazy. Like, in both cases, those veer towards the cyberpunk, like, sci-fi.
Yeah.
The hydrogen metal stuff specifically is a lot about the stuff that I've seen it talked about is like this is how you're going to end up going long distances in space because one of the theories is when you get hydrogen into it is hydrogen not helium right
I believe it's hydrogen
it's hydrogen
hydrogen's the most common element
right so like they hypercompress it and so if it's metastable first of all if it's metastable I'm going to drop some science on something I read this morning which means it's probably not knowledge at all It means that it can stay in that hard, like that firm metallic format. The format that's one of obviously if you took chemistry, there's the four formats.
Of chemicals.
Gas is a format, but if it's a solid, if it remains that metallic solid, then it could be used to like transmit electricity or messages, or it could be used in buildings and stuff like that without being compressed.
But you can turn all the air in this room into metal, which would destroy us right now.
I would hope.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate weapon. The ultimate metal weapon is destroying people by turning air into metal, and then all of a sudden your molecules are just dispersed. Yeah.
X-Men get weirder and weirder.
I know, yeah. We don't want to give Donald Trump the power of Magneto.
That was the worst possible outcome.
No, we really don't.
But the thing that they're saying is like, okay, if you could do that, then if you figured out a way to like release that and like decompress it, the energy that would be produced from that would be incredible. So what you end up doing is like storing a bunch of it by compressing it really deep and then getting up in space and being like, psst, like you pop a balloon and then it's like, psh, then you go really far.
It's just like warp drive.
Well, so I actually
dilithium crystals, rather.
I actually read about the like proposed EM drives that people have been debating for a long time, but apparently there is a paper that is undergoing peer review right now that is theoretically, I think may have passed through peer review but not been published yet, about an EM drive, which is the shitty analogy that the scientists use to tell it to stupid people like me, is like, what if by pushing on your driving wheel inside of a car, you could push your car? So it breaks like a fundamental law of physics, which is like, you know, Newton says for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction, which is why like you have to blow something up to go forward, right? There has to be combustion, energy is lost. This is like there's energy happening inside of a closed system that moves the entire system forward.
That's fascinating.
It only happens in like really small ways, but they're working on it. I don't know. Science.
Yeah. Science is pretty cool.
We're going to have pig humans driving our Ubers.
In space.
Using EM drives.
Welcome to the fucking future, man. Here we are.
I mean, I'd be cool with anything that means us in space and actually exploring, you know, getting out there a little bit. I feel like many of our problems are resource problems. You know?
Yeah, but I don't think the solution is like to go fuck up more worlds.
I mean,
I don't know. Like,
it's kind of what we're designed to do. Humans are basically.
I think that's what we've trained ourselves to do.
That's
all I'm saying. I think we need to.
We need to live in harmony with nature.
I think we need to do a better job of catching ourselves when we look for utopian solutions. And like one of those utopian solutions is like, oh, if we just make it to space, all the problems will disappear.
They won't. I just want there to be colonies on Mars and cool things.
That would be cool.
I would be happy to live in that world, but that world would also need people to make sure that the resources on Mars were being fairly distributed.
That's true.
And that like the people who got to go live on the dope space colonies weren't.
So we need to get rid of capitalism first.
On it.
That's step one.
Step one in Star Trek is the world gets destroyed.
Right. There's World War III. Capitalism is done.
Well, first there's genetic super soldiers.
That's true. And then there's World War III. Then there's no capitalism.
Then there's
beautiful space exploration.
No, then there's lots of drunk people.
The Prime Directive.
And then one drunk guy gets super lucky twice.
That's true.
And that's Captain Kirk?
No.
It's Zefram Cochrane. That's who it is. Yeah.
Who basically, first of all, he almost builds a warp drive, right? Mm. We've done this talk on a different stream before.
It's okay.
We played No Man's Sky a while ago. Yeah. That stream's gone. It's in the ether.
It's in space.
So Zefram Cochrane builds or like designs it, and then the Picard Enterprise gets brought back in time to when he built it.
Wow.
And like basically pushes him to like do the damn thing and finish it and get off of Earth. And then he gets lucky twice because there happen to be Vulcans watching.
At that time. They're going by.
That's even more lucky. They happen to be in the neighborhood.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the Enterprise knew about it, though. That's why.
That's some fucking circular timeline.
I mean, it's still the best Star Trek movie.
Yeah, it's definitely the best Star Trek movie.
Bringing things back to video games.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, someone.
Wait, is this a video game podcast? Are you sure?
So aliens, there's always like there's broadcast signals going out into space, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
What would be the worst video game if the only broadcast that intelligent life saw? What would be the worst video game for them to discover and base their concept of humanity?
Hatred.
Probably.
It's a game about shooting people because you hate them.
Yeah. It's bad.
It's
not good.
That's a game?
It's a game.
How do you know you hate them? Does it build any case?
It's the whole point of the game.
It's not like a game where you choose a race or something.
It opens with, well.
I mean, it's not far.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe that's the one, though. I think you're right.
Hatred.
What's the best game to send?
Journey?
Maybe. Journey's
Is there a video game that doesn't involve any sort of violence?
Yeah, lots of them.
Lots of them, yeah. But those wouldn't be very representative of humanity, frankly.
Yeah, sadly. Well, Journey is about like communication, like nonverbal communication. So it could be like a, oh, this is how we can bond even without any kind of human language.
You like skipped through all of Arrival to get to like.
I know, I did.
Oh, yeah, why didn't they just bring Journey up there?
Yeah, why didn't they just.
Like, that'd be fun, like a virtual reality body language game.
Yeah.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Oh, like what if it's like Star Trek Bridge Commander?
Perfect.
And then we can
then it's like,
be...
this is how we wish we were.
Right, exactly.
This is the world we want.
Our image of ourselves.
I don't know. Like, I feel like I would want something that represents the complexity. No, maybe you're right. I think something really pretty. And then they'd be like, oh, yeah.
Pretty and peaceful and, like, also about, like, an experience that's communication-based.
What if they then show up and they're like, oh, wow, it's a cool party town. And they show up and they're like, oh, shit, they have nukes. We didn't know about this. We only brought, we brought beer. We didn't bring
self-defense equipment. Nukes. Right.
Well, any alien
I don't want them to bring
will...
nukes anyway, but...
Yeah. If you could send a care package of video games to intelligent life, you don't know if they're good or evil, what would you want to
like
represent?
Like, what are your five?
Yeah, yeah, what would you want to represent Earth?
I think Journey's one of them.
Journey's
I like that.
Journey's I want, like, a really complex thing that they wouldn't be able to wrap their heads around.
Like a very systems-based
kind
of game?
Yeah, like a Crusader Kings or a Europa Universalis, something that's, like, really grand strategy, look at all of the complexity of human interaction that's hard for people to get along.
Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor.
That'd be cool. They'd be like, oh, yeah, that's home.
Be like, this is what our city looks like.
Yeah. I would send them Pokemon.
Pokemon
suck. Because just make them think we have Pokemon on Earth.
And they won't fuck with us.
They will think we're really cool.
Or they'll get here and they'll be like, oh, everyone's sad because all the Pokemon died. It's time to be, oh, no.
We should give them their own Pokemon.
We should give them Pokemon, yeah. What if, but the opposite could be true. What if they're like, oh, shit.
All right, by the time we go down there, we better have Pokemon, too. We're going to research a bunch of Pokemon, and they'll build their own Pikachus, their own Lapras's, and whatnot. And they'll come to town, and that'll be that.
I hope they have clef keys.
They probably do. They probably look like clef keys. What if it's just a bunch of keys in space?
That'd be cool.
I had an idea to talk about things today, and now it's just gone. Now it's
I feel like, well, we got three more games. Actually, we have two more games because we said Diaries.
It's like an obvious answer at this point. But like, I think Minecraft is like a game separate from its creator that's very good. I think it stands out as one of the best games of the last couple of decades in terms of like, look at all of our creativity. Like, look at what we could build together, and also is still interested in resources and like exploration and all of that.
Nice.
No, what about you, Tim? You get one pick.
I mean, I've told you guys before that ever since I beat the Pokemon League, I stopped really playing video games. And then the one chance in my life that I had to get into them was when I got a Sega Dreamcast for Christmas. And then we all know what happened to the Dreamcast.
Yeah, let's not talk about it.
Yeah, so Jedi Power Battles. These are the only games I remember playing. Jedi Power Battles,
good.
Tetris.
Good.
Some good. Version of Mario.
Good.
Okay.
I already said Pokemon, and so I need one more.
Well, actually, I think we actually Star hit five Fox. With Pokemon.
Oh,
Star Fox is good.
They might. Oh, wow. What if they're animal people?
Well, it also shows, like, hey, we know how to shoot things.
We know how to shoot
things. If they're animal people, we might not want to send them Pokemon, though.
I feel like we're missing something big here.
You're right.
Danielle, I feel like we're missing a
we
big
are.
Thing.
We're missing something
it's just video
grand
games.
About...
Oh, we could send them Tony Hawk Ride.
That's the true representation of the human race, especially in our era.
It shows our fallibility.
It shows that we suck.
And the fact that we build lots of chintzy shit from plastic.
Yep.
That's not fair. That fake skateboard is actually not that chintzy. It's like a sturdy,
solid, fake, broken skateboard.
Send them Twister. Let them have fun.
Yeah.
Twister.
They're going to have like eight limbs. That's like an unfair advantage.
Oh my god. What if they don't have any limbs? What if they just float as globs of stuff?
Yeah.
And they communicate
a
through scent.
A boy in his blob.
Yeah.
That would be great.
That should be.
Boy in his blob. Yeah. I think that's
You know, the WayForward remake of that was great.
I recall.
It's really good.
Very pretty. Welcome to Waypoint Radio. It's a podcast about video games.
Ostensibly.
I've been playing some games. You've been playing some games.
I have.
This week. We've actually taken some time out again. Earlier this week, I beat Gravity Rush 2. We actually have a piece going up on that today on the like interesting way that game tackles class. Patrick and I wrote about it. And then in general, the other thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and this doesn't have to be a big topic, but again, it's going up on the site today. Patrick wrote about like the really good year Japan is having so far for games. Yeah. Not that like Japan got together and is like, this isn't the Olympics of games necessarily, but it's like Yakuza 0. Mm-hmm.
Yakuza.
Persona 5 is coming out soon.
Yes.
Gravity Rush 2 I played and really like.
Resident
Evil 7.
And arguably, at the very, very end of last year, we had, you know, Final Fantasy and Last Guardian.
So. And we will have Nier soon. Yeah. It's just like all of the games I want to play right now have been, not all of them, but many of them have been Japanese. And it's been a while since there's been that consistent string like that of just like, oh, wow, these are all surprisingly good, which is rad.
And arguably almost PS2 era.
Well, I don't want to dismiss, like, there are lots of people who love JRPGs, and those have come out over the last few years.
I'm just talking about for myself.
Right.
You know, totally. Personally, the last time I was this excited about this many Japanese games, like more so than Western games or any other.
Right. Or just like this string of them in a row. So that's been really cool that we've been kind of doing that, because it's, I think there'd been a lot of talk about like how bad the Japanese game dev scene, not bad, but how it hadn't found crossover success in the way that it used to, in the way that it used to dominate the industry. And now it seems to be in a really good place, and that's exciting.
And I guess it's also worth mentioning, saying, like, outside of Nintendo. Because I've always been a huge Nintendo fan. So, like, yes, all of those games from Japan I've been super excited about. But now it's like, oh, from everybody else in Japan, it's also now very exciting.
Which also, like, yeah, Zelda is also coming out. Like, there's more and more, like, every few weeks there seems to be something that's, like, the thing that everyone wants to talk about. Whereas in the last couple of years, it's felt like that's happened less and less, and it's been like, oh, this is a niche title that some people want to talk about, but it doesn't dominate the conversation in the big way. So yeah, that's been really cool. But despite that, the thing that I've played the most this week, not even the most, but I put some time into it, was an American game from forever ago, which is I played some SWAT 4 for the first time.
Oh, please do
which
tell.
Which is a game... So I'll set this up for you, Tim. A long time ago...
You gotta explain SWATs 1 through 3.
Well, actually, I actually have to go back further than that. Because SWAT 1, Yes, so there was a series of adventure games called Police Quest. From the 1980s, when you just put Quest on something and turn it into a game.
Yeah.
And those were like super interested in the procedural elements of policing. Like they were still story driven. They still had like larger plots. But things like when you pull a car over, what do?
Wow. Like, so it's ethical decisions.
At the time, those early ones were ethical decisions in that you had procedure that you had to follow. But it wasn't ethical in the sense of... It didn't contextualize it in the sense of like, oh, policing it could be better in America. It contextualized it in the sense of like, be a good cop like all the rest of us, you know. And then eventually that became the SWAT series. And that series is wild because the first SWAT game is a full motion video game like Sewer Shark or what's like a popular FMV game like. Do you know what I mean when I say a full motion video game, Tim?
No.
Harvester.
But that's a bad one.
It's a terrible game.
This episode's called Video Games for Dummies.
That's it. Video Games for Dummies.
It's good.
Fuck. What is a good example of an FMV game for someone who hasn't played?
There was the one that came out like 2 years ago.
That's not one of the formative ones. Full motion video.
Oh, you said that. Okay.
Yes. So that's like
basically like a genre in the 90s that had like professional video, like actors and that sort of thing. And it was usually pretty grainy.
Gotcha.
But you would make like decisions like, oh, if I press the button at this time, the action will change.
Like, so like Dragon's Lair is in a sense a full motion video game, which just uses animation instead of video.
There was a Klingon one. There's a Star Trek Klingon one. That one was cool.
Yeah, people are naming things like Contradiction and Phantasmagoria. I promise you, Tim has no idea what those are. I promise you.
I remember playing some 007 games. Were those kind of...
No.
Okay.
Not that I can think of that had...
Sort of a...
No, like, it's literally the whole game is full motion video.
It's basically a video that you interact with. Like a 90s grainy video that you're interacting with.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the first SWAT was one of those where it was just like... A cop telling you, like, all right, you have to use the mirror to go under, and then here's your gun. And, when you snipe, it's the wind direction. And then you had to go do a mission and, like, follow the procedure by clicking on parts of the screen in the right order.
And this was popular. People loved this.
No. Please. I mean, the genre was generally Star Wars Rebel Assault. Thank you, Jones, Ice Cream. The first Rebel Assault was animated, but the second one, which you should look up footage for, Tim, is all live action.
Wow.
And it's all about them taking out a new type of star, a new type of TIE fighter, TIE interceptor, hybrid.
Like, who directed this video? George Lucas directed?
If I say yes, will you play it?
Definitely
Georgie.
It was totally him.
He was like, this is the actual episode.
Faster and more intense.
One is this new TIE interceptor shit. It was called like a shadow. I don't remember what it was called. Anyway, so that was his first SWAT. The second SWAT was a real-time strategy game, like a real-time tactical game of like top-down view, and you're clicking and moving people around. And then 3 and 4 became first-person shooters, but like first-person shooters where killing, like I played through 4 or 5 levels last night, and the most like action I saw was I kind of had a mission to go into a club where 2 gangs were fighting, kind of like white gang versus a Hispanic gang, and that was like 12 people were involved total, and like each one of them was frightening because they had guns, and that is really fascinating in terms of gameplay design. And I think it is really interesting to play that game now in our context, where we are much more vocal about the issues in policing across the country in terms of what good policing looks like. But at the same time, I definitely think that it holds up in terms of being a game that fucks with the first-person shooter genre. So like, I don't know, even realistic first-person shooters inside of the console space or inside of the kind of mainstream space are games where you shoot hundreds of people over the course of your game, right? Like, even something like the Call of Duty series, which is supposed to be like a military action shooter, like you're just blowing through people.
Yeah. You're basically a camera with a win button.
Right, you know? Exactly.
That's kind of how it works.
Like Battlefield Hardline was a game in which you were supposed to be a cop, but also you fought by yourself dozens and dozens of people, or arrested dozens and dozens of people per level. And that game had all sorts of other problems. But in this, like, you know, there's the first mission is I think this is the first one. Is the first one the first one might be the one of the early ones is like you get a call from a convenience store and someone is inside with a gun and like, okay, like that's okay. Yeah. And there might be some people in there who are not members, who are not like with her with guns. Mm. And moving and clearing those rooms feels like Rainbow Six, but the optimal way to play that game where like the goal is not to kill anybody. On the hardest difficulty, if you kill anybody, you lose the mission and have to restart it.
That's cool.
Which is a really like interesting design. And instead it's about de-escalation, but that de-escalation is mostly like throwing a flashbang and then hitting the button
out.
To get, well, no, like there's only, so the only things that knock people out are a taser, which has one round in it and you have to be super close and it's like really hard to use. You have like pepper spray, but it doesn't knock anybody out. It just like disorients them.
Okay.
And you have like some stun grenades that can, like you have like a, basically like a beanbag grenade, a flash grenade, and a like a smoke grenade.
So it's almost unrealistic in the opposite way. Like, right. Because pepper spray will knock somebody to the,
it makes them like go, ah, and they'll drop their gun, but you still then have to direct them to get on the ground and then handcuff them. Like, it doesn't just knock them out. It disorients them and it gives them, it means that you can handle them from there, but like, it isn't like I point this button at you, hit the button, and then you drop,
right.
Which is like the way stun guns in modern games work.
For
in
sure.
Battlefield
For
Hardline,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
And there's no like melee attack or anything. And also, you're like hyper vulnerable because it isn't just like you lose when you die. You lose when you get incapacitated. And it's like pretty easy to incapacitate someone even if they have body armor on.
Sure.
And so the vibe ends up feeling like super tense and sometimes even less like a police story and more like something like Seven or Silence of the Lambs.
Mm-hmm.
Like the second mission is like super like famous in a sense in that game, in which you're going after a serial killer. You've identified where he lives. You know that he and maybe an accomplice live in the house. You know that his mother lives in the house. And it's just like a really fucked up house that isn't being taken care of and that has like some shit in the basement. And it like it definitely is a thing that's like, okay, this is very of its time. Like women who are like tied up in ways that are like, oh, okay. But also very much referencing that history of thriller, of film thriller. And the score in those sections is really interesting because it is like early synth like,
oh wow,
squeals and like spooky. It's spooky to move through these spaces, and so that was really interesting to check it out. Alternatively, sometimes you get into a gunfight, and again, this is like a gunfight against 2 people, and it's just like bow now, but bow, but down, bow, 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 and it's like, oh, 90s techno, good.
No, that sounded like some, what, not Rage Against the Machine, Red Hat Chili Peppers.
Yeah, it was. Oh, yeah, that was just, I was doing my bass voice instead of my synth voice.
Bassy,
right? Exactly. It's,
this came out what year?
That came out in, that's a good question. I actually don't
late
know.
Late 90s, early 2000s?
I want to say late 90s. It was a Rational joint, actually.
It sounds great if
you hear that. Was it 2004? 5, actually?
No. Yes, it was. Okay. Look at that. Wait,
I was editing a piece about it.
Were you?
And that's why. Like, I wasn't sure if you were talking about SWAT 3 or 4 for a second.
So 3 came out before, and my understanding, I haven't played any 3. Yeah, that sounds right. I didn't play any 3 at all. So 4 is the first time I played since 2. Okay. My computer was just bad when this game came out.
And so I didn't play any of them.
Play it at all.
Yeah.
The thing that ends up being interesting is, like, where we are at with policing is a different place as a nation.
Yeah.
Though even then, I remember feeling less enthralled by the talk around it. It's really...
This is Bush era. This is prime peak Bush era. Yes. You know. So
it's one of those things of, like, there was a video going around by a friend of the site, Danny O'Dwyer, in which he was pepper spraying the serial killer's mom, basically, and bring her down onto her knees to arrest her, and yelling, like, hitting the yell button. And, like, that's the right move in this scenario where there's definitely a serial killer in the house, and I guess she's threatening and so. I don't know. Maybe that pepper spraying her is probably not the best solution.
Yeah.
But the there was something in me that tensed up at the police, at being the cops yelling at this woman.
Yeah.
Not that she was doing nothing, like, again, she was hiding the fact that her son was a serial killer.
Can you imagine a world where, let's say 2020,
okay, yeah,
presidential elections in the air.
Yeah.
Instead of a debate, we have the two main candidates play a video game like this, a thought experiment.
Right, to see what
video
they do.
Game, to see what they do for an hour.
This is very thought-provoking.
Okay, so what do you think they would do?
I don't know.
So, it's obviously 2020, so it's going to be Kanye West versus Elizabeth Warren.
There you go.
I would love to see the debate formats change in wild different ways, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to see them do. I would love to see the, like, to put it in terms that Danielle will definitely get. I don't know if you will. The Kobayashi Maru style.
Yes.
I'm going to get you on some Star Trek shit, Tim, one of these days.
Tim, we're going to watch Star
Trek. Can you explain the Kobayashi Maru?
It's basically an impossible scenario.
Okay.
So it refers to something in the Star Trek series where, you know, every cadet in Starfleet, if you're in the, like, command, if you're going to be commanding people, it's a test of, like, your character under, you're all going to die. It's a no-win scenario, basically. Right. So it's like, how do they react under those circumstances?
Nice.
Kirk, of course, cheats and, like, changes the computer so he can win.
I saw an episode of Quantico like this.
But, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. They stole that from the future.
Basically, they stole it from the future of Star Trek. Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing for me, too, is there was definitely a moment where I shot a dude that I didn't. So, like, first of all, shooting anybody does feel weird. It's also just easier to, like, tell your crew to do it for you. Like, all right, just breach and clear this room for me, and then I don't have to pull the trigger or go in first. And that already is, like, a good test of leadership.
Yeah.
Of, like, you know what, Jackson, open this door. You know, Fields, you get in there, you clear it. I'm not going to fuck with this. Like, if I die, the whole mission is over. You could all die, and as long as I live, we win.
Yeah.
So, which is bad.
That's its own commentary.
It
right
totally
there.
Is.
Yeah.
But then, so there was a moment in the club level where I was, there's kind of a nightclub scenario, and it was a bunch of different, like, a couple of bars, a couple of, like, venue spaces, the bathrooms. And every time you play the level, the distribution of characters is different. So you never, like, it's not just, like, I memorized the pattern. And so I went in and, you know, had cleared out most of it. And then I couldn't find the last guy, and we went up to this, like, second floor, like, balcony looking down onto the dance floor, and I saw moving over to the left. First of all, like, the best thing this game does ever is, like, oh, that guy has a gun, and then his response isn't to shoot at you, it's to run away and, like, to disappear from your view, and that's like, oh.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Oh, like, where is he? I know there's a guy with a gun out there. Where is he? He would kill all of us. And that is already better than, or more interesting than 90% of first-person shooters I get to play. Because their, like, AI routine is about survival, not about, like, killing you necessarily. But so I see this guy on the second floor, like, turn around the corner. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go around that corner. And I pop around and he has a gun. He has, like, an Uzi. He's a submachine gun. And he, like, almost sees me. This is a situation where it's like, oh, I got him in my sights. I go to shoot. He goes to shoot me, or he doesn't even go to shoot me. He turns towards me. I feel myself press the button to pull the trigger. My first like collection of shots misses, and I'm like, oh, thank God! Like he didn't. I would you get points taken off if you kill somebody who if you shoot somebody who doesn't like pose a threat to you.
Right.
And also, you shouldn't kill people generally in life. And then he turned and went to fire back, and then I shot him and killed him. And I was like, well, if I hadn't fired that first time, could have I closed the distance and gotten him to like give up? I don't know, maybe. Like, probably could have, but I fucked up and fired first. But this is one of those scenarios that when the cops come through later, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, he was shooting at you. You definitely were in the right to kill him. It's like, oh, damn. Okay. Thanks, SWAT. Damn. Thanks for making me think about this in a very intense way.
That's fascinating. I really do want to play it.
It is, like, as someone who plays a lot of first-person shooters, it's just interesting to see someone who was – or a group that were working on something that was pushing against – the or like kind of synthesizing a bunch of different things. Because again, it definitely has a Rainbow Six vibe, but like a much faster paced thing. There's no like planning stage of literally dropping points. You just like go in and they can give orders. So it's worth checking out. Just to be clear, the reason I'm playing this is it just came out on Good Old Games this week.
Yeah.
I think we have a piece, like you said, going up this week on
Yeah, going up this weekend. Yeah. Tomorrow, I think.
That sounds right.
Should be a good time. You should read it, not waypoint.vice.com.
Waypoint.vice.com. Danielle, what have you been playing this week?
I have been endlessly nonstop playing Punch Club on 3DS.
Punch Club?
That's right, you heard it right.
Yeah, first rule of Punch Club, don't drink it.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't drink the punch.
Uh-huh.
You win. You win at Punch Club.
It's good. You win all the fights if you're the only one not drinking the punch. You just have your wits about you.
Exactly, because you're going to fail your drug test.
Okay. So tell us about Punch Club.
So Punch Club came out probably about a year ago, I think, originally. This is the new 3DS version.
Yeah, I definitely lost an afternoon to it at work once at so Giant good. Bomb. So it was like last summer or something like that, or spring. It just disappeared. It just disappeared. My afternoon vanished.
I've been playing it in between, like, I'm like, all right, I'll edit a piece, then I'll play 5 minutes. Edit a piece, then I'll play 5 minutes. Like, I can't stop. It's a really, really good sort of management sim that also has really good strategic combat in it. So it kind of is layering the combat on top of, like, just a very satisfying core of, like, you are a boxer, and you have to train every day. You also have to have a job, you know, to make money, and that's going to take away time from training. You have to balance all these stats, basically, as your little fighter. And as you, you know, get into fights, you know, professional fights, and also get into street fights, also with Ninja Turtles. This game is awesome.
Right, there are definitely some, like,
so
goofy...
So what's the day job? What's the person... What's the...
He's a construction worker or a pizza delivery guy.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's definitely sort of... there's actually, like, a really strong narrative to it too. Like, it's like, oh, you're this little boy and your father is killed, and there's a whole thing about, you know, there's like a whole martial arts narrative. Okay.
I was thinking, is there a video game equivalent to that movie Boyhood, you know, where you just follow someone from is there
every day
of the Sims, right?
The Sims,
oh, probably.
Yeah, basically. The Sims is that.
That's what it
basically.
Is. That's what it
That's
is.
One of the games we should send to the aliens.
Yes,
also
definitely.
Real talk.
Actually, that'll give them a realistic
This is it. Like, yeah, good and bad. Yeah. Here we go.
I'm surprised you didn't say that Matrix game that
the Matrix
online
it's would dead say, it's dead if it wasn't dead I would be all for people playing it.
Yeah, that's what the aliens can
maybe
do
that's
for
the
us.
Aliens maybe that'll be their gift. They'll say, Austin, we brought you two gifts. What
you
are
one
they
wish.
And I'll say the Matrix online, and my second wish is make it work with everybody and play it with me, please. Also, and they'll be like, boom, 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 because they communicate with music in this world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then they'll play it, but, like, through a keyboard.
I was thinking, like, the worst-case scenario if I send that Pokemon game out there is if it is, like, what's the movie you're referencing with that?
Third Encounters. Encounters the Third Kind.
Yeah, yeah.
Third Encounters.
But then it's just a ship that comes down and says, Pika?
Right, that's not bad.
That'd be
crazy. They just talked to us.
They only know Pokemon language.
Right, that's all we sent them. Yeah. The thing is that we would be sending them like a Game Boy version instead of being able to say the version. Instead of being able to say Pika,
make those sounds.
That's the sound Pokemon made in the original.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Punch Club is a game. Punch Club, like Pokemon, has like a tactical combat system.
Yeah, it's actually really good. So depending on sort of your build, you can have like an agility build, a strength build, or a blocking heavy turtle. The turtle, the way of the turtle is the way it's called. You're going to want to use different combinations of things. Punches, kicks, counterattacks, you know, all sorts of stuff. And like... it's actually fairly, it's not realistic in the way that, you know, boxing itself, unless this is a Thai boxing game, there would be no kicking anyway. But anyway, and there's Ninja Turtles in it, or Ninja Turtle knockoffs. I think they're Ninja Alligators, actually, but, you know, it's
close. Are they ninjas or are they something else?
Well, they have masks and they live in a sewer.
Well, that's ninjas.
Yeah.
That's what I read about in history.
Yeah, it's your world history. It's what the, you know, it's what the aliens are going to see. Ninja Turtles, realistic.
Yeah.
But it's just so satisfying, and it's really, really fun, because it's both the sort of, you know, the fun of like crunching numbers and like getting a little bit better every day, and also the fun of like good strategic combat.
There's no like real time element to it, right? There's
no like, I don't
or
think
sorry,
so.
Not, like there's no
it's
like,
every action you take the clock.
Okay,
sort of
but in other words, like it's not like it's 11 or it's 1 p.m. in game time.
Yeah,
in real life, that means it's
and thank God because
that would be rough.
Is there a boss?
There are several sort of bosses. Right. Yeah, there's like story bosses, and then there's also like, you know, you have to win the tournament.
Right,
so
that's
kind of like a boss.
One of the things I liked about the game a lot was that it's structured such that you have, like a boxer, you have like a fight coming up in a few days, basically. And so you have X amount of days to like prep for that fight and be in the right best condition you can be. I forget what the bonus is for setting up a fight. Is it just that you... There's something like I always wanted to be waiting for another fight. I never wanted to
be... You can always
be
signing up
for another fight. For some reason, I never wanted to not be signed up for one.
Because you can, because you win medals, and that's how you, like, actually level up your
right,
abilities.
Okay,
that's
there you go. Yeah.
Pretty much
that
the
makes
mechanic.
Sense.
And it's also just... So I box. I currently am doing MMA stuff right now. More wrestling and jiu-jitsu stuff right now.
You box people, then you heal them because you
exactly.
Also,
I'm also I'm the boxing EMT. You know the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know the whole
backstory. Apparently.
But it also just really actually feels like the excitement of going to a gym and training. And like this is the thing. I wrote a little piece about it, and it's like secretly the best part of training in any kind of fighting is the training itself. Is the sort of like I'm going to go to the gym for 3 hours. All my worries, all my cares, they just melt away because all I care about is training and being in
the Rocky
this.
Montage.
Being a literal Rocky montage, basically. And this game really feels like that.
I always wondered why he didn't seem more worried about rent. And like being,
You know, that would be actual realistic.
But after you're saying the training would help. Like the training like makes it all disappear because all you can focus on
all
is,
you
like,
can think about is
punching
this.
Huge slabs of meat or whatever.
Yeah. You know, you got to punch your meat.
Gotta punch
you actually
meat.
Have to do buy food in this game, believe
right, you do.
That's actually a mechanic as well. Like, you can't not work. You have to go to your job so that you can be paying for food. And you have to rest. Like, there's all these stats that you're managing. So, it's so good. It's like one of those things where
I'm glad.
It might end up on, like, a goatee list because I'm obsessed with it.
I hit a point in it where I wasn't sure if... it was going anywhere bigger, like not bigger, but like I didn't know if I liked the progression curve in a way that I wanted to stick with it. So I'm glad to hear that like it is going well for you.
How far did you get?
I got kind of far. I got to like the illegal fights.
Okay.
Did you to the illegal
well,
fights?
Well, they go on the whole time.
Right, but like I was doing some of those and like progressing in both that side of things and the...
Did you unlock one of the strategy builds? Way of the tiger, way of the bear. Okay.
I think I did tiger.
I'm doing tiger.
Is there ever a situation once you delivered the pizza to the person that you just fought the other day?
Oh,
well,
that's
there
a good
is
idea.
A situation where you deliver a pizza to a ninja turtle.
Right.
Ninja alligator.
Ninja alligator.
In fact, that's an entire recurring series of events. There's special pizzas that need to go to a special address, and it's always a sewer, and it's always a ninja alligator. So you're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're correct.
I tried to date a lady. I had to like click on things.
Oh yeah, you have to find things for her.
Find things in the environment.
So that's my only gripe with this game is that you can't play as a woman. Like I would like to play this as a little, you know, as a little bruiser. Like as a
little bruiser. That's your brand.
My actual little boxing name was Tiny Bruiser.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
Is it like Tiny Dancer, but for people
Tiny
who
Bruiser.
But yeah.
Yes.
Hold me closer, Tiny
Hold
Bruiser.
Hold me closer, Tiny Bruiser.
It's a song about clinching.
That's what it is. That's what it is. You gotta hug people to death. It's beautiful.
So that's Punch Club. That's out now?
Yeah, on 3DS. Okay. I mean, it's on like iOS and other things, but this is the 3DS version. It just came out, so it was an excuse.
It feels like a really good mobile game in general, or like portable game, so like that feels like a good fit for me.
I've been playing it going to the gym.
Nice.
Like, and actually, like, when I get out of the gym at night after wrestling for a couple hours, I'm really excited and really happy. I get on the subway and I'm just playing this
Punch Club.
This is so good.
All punching everything.
Yep.
I think it's time for a quick dip in the old question bucket. Tim,
yeah.
It's your first time on the podcast. I need a number.
A number? 13.
That's a low number.
It's a great number.
That's fine. We'll go with 13.
Yeah, I was born January 13th. Yeah.
All right.
It's my birthday.
Happy,
next month.
Happy late birthday. Thank happy you. Early birthday.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank
this you. Comes in from Dave. So this is actually from... Oh, you know what? This is the, I didn't combine. I'm going to go back to this 13. Okay. This comes in from David, yeah. Not from Dave.
David, okay.
Who says, whenever a piece of media comes out abroad, he's from the UK, comes out abroad without a confirmed international release, am I hurting the potential for future translations by importing because I probably won't purchase and play the game again if it's localized? Does the fact that the most determined fans will import and push through the language barrier mean that the remaining group isn't large enough for actual translations of future titles to be profitable? Thank you for taking the moment to read this. Wishing you all the best with the transition into whatever Vice Gaming becomes.
Thanks, David. It's an old one.
This is the 13th email that came in.
That ever came in.
Well, other ones might have been
deleted. So he's from the UK, right? What translation is he... Am I missing the word translation?
So in the games industry, a game that, say, comes out in the... it doesn't happen often in the US to the UK, but a Japanese game will come out.
Gotcha.
So for instance, there's a series I really like called Valkyria Chronicles. There's a new entry sort of in the series that's out in Japan right now that I could import. I could spend money to bring it over. Mm. I probably wouldn't be able to read anything in it because it's not in Japanese and I haven't taken Japanese in a decade. But... there have been times when I've done that. When the first Demon Souls came out, I imported that. I import lots of Gundam games because they don't get translated or they don't get localized. Mm. And so what David's trying to get at is, like, if you're a super fan of a thing and you do spend the money to bring something over from another territory, then does that lower the chance of it actually coming over? And that does happen sometimes even within English-speaking games. There's an old DS game called Hotel Dusk I really love, and the sequel to that just never came out in the U.S., ever. But it is like the European version exists with English in it. It just never came to the U.S.
Is there like a Netflix of games? This seems like there should be, right?
Yeah,
like
you
shouldn't
there
have
is.
To get a disc.
There probably should be.
Yeah,
GameFly exists and does give you discs. Actually, still
okay.
There isn't really. So Microsoft wanted to do something similar. It sounded like, there sort of is, I guess.
Yeah, it's just not the same level of like a Netflix. It's so many different things.
PlayStation Plus. There are like services you can subscribe to on both the PlayStation and the
Xbox
One that let you get like a free game a month. But you're not like picking. Okay. I'm subscribing to X.
Gotcha.
Or like I get X amount of rentals or something like that.
Yeah.
That would make things
the origin
way better.
Thing.
Right. There is the origin thing. There's the EA Electronic Arts does something very similar. The EA Vault.
Yes.
Which is similar. But yeah, like there's nothing that simple, and so you do run into these issues where it's like sometimes it just feels ridiculous. Where it's like England has this game, or like America has this game. I'm in France. I know English. Just let me fucking import this game and play it, or just release it here. More importantly, so I don't have to spend the extra money on bringing it in via overseas and spending extra money on taxes and stuff like that. I don't know, David, if you're lowering the chances or not.
Yeah, that's a really really good question because it depends on how many people are also doing this, right? It depends on, and I always think of people, the kind of person who will import a game.
Yeah.
Might be such a fan that they do buy it twice.
Totally.
So I don't know how big the number of people who are like,
Demon's
I just
twice.
Want it once kind of thing.
Right. Well, like, I think actually like my gut says that would not hurt the case for that thing coming over. In fact, the more people who do import it, that's a signal that that there is a place for it in that market. The amount of people who would import any game is very low.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of... And I'm speaking completely anecdotally here from things I've heard from other people over the last decade of being in the industry and talking to people and looking at numbers here and there, and I'm kind of synthesizing all of that. But, if a game is really, really, really popular as an imported thing, that is still nowhere near the number of sales that would be necessary for it to be... like worth localizing and bringing it over. Like, so that number is not necessarily going to like cut into it. But what it could do is if something like when Demon's Souls was like picked up by a huge community in the West, it could signal to the publisher, oh, the taste there is not the same as we thought it was. There's actually a case to be made for import or for localizing this and bringing it over to the West. So David, I say do your thing.
Import
the game that you want to import. And have fun
be
with
a fan.
It.
You know,
yeah,
Star
be a fan.
Wars
be a fan.
Came I mean, out And it's only in Japanese, no subtitles.
Right.
I would totally,
you would totally do it.
Yeah.
I did that for anime for years. And listen, our anime situation in the world is way better now than it used to be. In terms of
it's improved.
Yeah. It's definitely improved. If you want to watch an anime, you can fucking do it now. You don't have to go wait in the Elizabeth Street Mall in the basement for this dude to come over and unlock his store at 2 p.m. because he doesn't set hours because he knows that you want anime bad. Wow. He's just going to wait for you.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I totally identify with you there.
That's all I'm saying.
That guy.
Let me do one more number, Tim. All right. From like 1 to 100.
All right. I'll go for 57.
Ooh. Why 57?
I don't know.
Heinz?
No, it just seemed right.
Is it a Heinz thing?
Maybe.
It could be. That could be. So this
57
comes in
variety.
From Emilio from Puerto Rico, who says, so, in the past weeks, you've received a lot of questions about writing, and I found it really helpful just to write every day and post it to my Tumblr. I feel I'm really productive and that my writing has gotten better. However, I am looking for any more specific advice on how to write, for lack of a better term, think pieces. I feel like I have a good idea for a couple, but how to structure it and how to begin seems like a hard task for me. Do I just start writing a piece from scratch? Should I skip an introduction and get to the meat if that's what I have? Should I come up with a thesis statement first? Can you talk about your process writing these pieces? Thank you for any answers you can give me. My goal is to join Waypoint someday because I feel your website's type of content is unique in the gaming landscape. Thank you so much, Emilio.
Thank
we
you,
do
Emilio.
Our best a lot. Danielle, when you write like long form pieces, where do you start?
I usually have ideas in my head, and I've been doing this for a little while, so it's like fairly easy for me to just kind of write an introduction, which I'll probably go back to, you know, kind of boilerplate, just saying, here's the thing I want to say, and then I go into the thing that I want to say. Then I make a lot of edits. I sort of used to think of it as like throwing paint on a canvas,
sure,
and then actually sort of shaping it into words. It's like a very visual metaphor for me. I do think, you know, my process might be different from Austin's, which might be different from Patrick's,
totally,
which might be, you know, whatever kind of helps you.
As you develop as a writer, you will also develop your particular, like,
your habits.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, what works for you. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try new things necessarily. Like, I definitely was the sort of person who, for years and years and years, just kept it all in my head and then, like, barfed it out onto a page and then, like, moved it around until it was good. But then as I did more and more work, I, like, started taking notes. Like, someone, another writer who I really respected was like, Austin, you have to fucking start taking notes. And I was like, ah. I just have it all up. And like, meanwhile, you understand, I'm taking notes for other things I'm writing.
Right.
Like, I'm doing academic work at that point that's like 30, 40,000 words long. And so, of course, I have it like notes. I'm not just all up here. But I didn't want to do it for games writing for some reason. And then I was like, fine, I'll start taking notes. And I was like, oh, wow, this is like way better. Like, I'm glad I got pushed to start doing that.
What do you mean by taking notes?
So, like, if I'm writing a piece, let's say, so I'm in the middle of writing a piece now about like post-truth America, right? Like the post fact, the alternative fact, tied into this old tabletop role playing game, and like how that's been an interesting lens for me to work out why it is we're struggling in this moment. And so, whenever I'm thinking about those, first of all, I'm just dumping in any ideas I have onto a doc, right? Which is like, oh shit, this is a good link. I'm going to bring this in. I'm just going to put this here so I remember it when it's time to like really sit down and hammer this out. But then also, I'll do an outline eventually, which is like, which does for me start with some sort of thesis statement or thesis idea, like some sort of like driving point that I'm trying to get at. Sometimes I don't even have that necessarily, but I have a question that I want to answer, or I have a statement that I think is evocative and that is like the engine that is pushing me to write the piece. Because sometimes you do sit down to write, you know, prose or journalistic prose, critical prose isn't always the same as academic prose, and that you're not writing to prove a thesis necessarily. But you should, for me, these sorts of think pieces should have a thesis at the heart of them by the time you're
definitely
done.
Definitely be making an argument.
Yes,
you need
totally.
To convince people. Yeah.
And so from there, I end up building out an outline that is like, here is the top section. Here's like here's what the body, the middle of the body looks like. Here are like the three like things I want to hit. And then I structure that out. And then that's all flexible too. Like sometimes I'll have like, oh, this is three sections. Oh, wait, no, that's one section. This is really boring. This is like, you have no idea how many words I fucking cut. You have to. Like that's been a big thing. Tim, do you do much writing?
Not much writing, but I do stand-up.
Oh,
do
sure.
Stand-up.
You do stand-up.
Probably a lot of the same principles.
I bet you do more than do stand-up.
But I think in my version of taking notes is just tweeting every 5 seconds.
Nice.
And then one day when I'm ready to turn into something I do on stage, I try to find the thesis whatever in those, I've been thinking about.
Yeah, and then you delete them all so that no one can steal your material.
I think I'm not big enough for that yet. At some point, I'll get
one
big
day.
Enough where
one
I
day. Have you have an intern tweeting for you.
Listen, yes, when true. Someone steals yeah. your shit, you fucking come on this podcast and we'll put it on blast.
That's right.
You fucking have your back, Tim.
That's right.
A thesis I'm working on right now is I'm trying to build the case that Barack Obama made first black president progress. And that we need to be able to come to a consensus about how we judge him. Because he could only do first black president progress.
Right, he was never going to do good president progress. Right?
Yeah, but he's in a bubble, you know? Right. He can't show too many emotions. He can only show, you know.
Do you think how many times do we have to bubble it, do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think
how
second and third black president?
I think
president?
After a third black president, we'll be able to truly just be in a space where we can, you know.
A post-racial presidency?
No, but at least then we'll be able to do relative black presidencies.
Yeah. Because, I mean, on both sides, you know, there are black Americans who feel like he didn't do enough for the black
totally.
Community. But he also had to deal with, you know, running the full country. You
right.
know, you
can only, and also, like, people
it's
obstructing
like the first
him
black person at the office.
Every step.
Or the first, you
right,
know.
Totally. It's,
yeah,
it is.
Only do, this is part of his incremental
how
progress.
Many people do you think called him eloquent to his face or articulate?
Oh, my God.
How many? On a count.
I think very,
more than 1,000?
You know Biden did.
What is it, more than 1,000?
Probably more than 1,000. Oh, you're just so articulate. You're so well-spoken.
Yeah.
You're clean. You're so clean.
You're clean. Wow. Yeah.
It's clean and articulate. Wow. That's what Biden said about him at a debate before he was on the ticket.
Yeah,
I'm sure Donald Trump has said it many times.
I'm sure he will continue to. So yeah, I think that's the for us. It is seems to be that there is a degree of note taking involved. I think that's the only way you end up getting something really good. And then it's not just preparation. It's that second stage of like, here are all of my words. How do I now turn them into something more than just a collection of really good ideas? We do lots of editing here, and a lot of the pieces that come in at 2,500, 3,500 words, and we cut them down to 1,500 or 2,000 words, and that's frankly still too long. And I say that as someone who got here by writing 3,000-word screeds.
I think this is one thing that I see the most of, is that, you know, people often use too many words to say something simple.
Yeah.
Or even if you're not saying something simple, when you're kind of, like, pontificating overly, you know, sort of using overly flowery language, like, you should be able to use words in any way that you want. Your voice is your voice. There's a musical quality words. I think, you know, it's certainly, sometimes that is absolutely appropriate, but using that for everything is
so, like,
unnecessary and gets in the way.
Like, here are two columns that I love that we do. So we do Postscripts, which is from Cameron Kunzelman, or Postscript, and then we do a postcard from Jack DeKeat. The former is really argumentative. It has a thesis. It argues that thesis, and Cameron gets the fuck in and gets the fuck out.
Yep.
Like, he submitted things before they're like 900 words. Right? I've been like, oh, word? Like, you said some shit in 900 words.
And there's only like
I'm
10
winded.
Words to cut.
Right,
at
exactly.
All. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, you need more here. Like, this is really good, and I actually want you to expand on this. Yeah. Which, again, I'm not saying that shorter is better necessarily, but it can be hard to cut words from a piece that you're writing if you've put them out there. Jack DeKeat writes these longer pieces of 1,500 to 2,500 words that are really flowery and really evocative and that lull you into a certain rhythm, and that is the point.
And that's
of
appropriate
those
to that, exactly.
Exactly. He's not there to make an argument about the state of the games industry or about politics or about death. He is there to envelop you in the feeling of playing a game. And so that works really well for him. And so, like, that is, for me, like, the spread of like, the shortness, the thing that Cameron does really well is he'll write – shout out to Cameron Kunzelman. He'll write 1,500 words and then cut 500. And the reason I think writers learn how to do that is – and this is the thing I've said for a long time is like those 500 words weren't wasted. They were a bridge to get you to your final point. And you can cut them because they're redundant or because they deserve a different piece all to their own. So like that's my two big things. Like find a pre-writing system that works for you based on what you're writing and then spend the time afterwards to really edit it and figure out where you need to cut or where you need to expand.
Just don't be precious when
or
it's time
force
to
someone
cut.
To read it out loud to you. And
yes.
Reading it out loud was the best advice that I ever got.
Notice when they are like getting bored of reading it, frankly. That's been the weirdest thing about being at like a website that has the technology to see where people bounce off of an article. Where it's like, oh, wow, yeah, this is the paragraph right here. Like, we went from 80% of people reading it to 30%. Like, what happened in this paragraph? That's like – that doesn't necessarily turn what we do into a mechanistic writing, but it's useful input to have, certainly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. That's – I like having a practice like writing. I like having a thing that's like, this is – I know I could be better at this by just continuing to do it and looking at people who I think do it well.
It's a very punch club kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? And I mean that actually, like, not, it's actually like a martial arts kind of thing in it. So I'm not saying that facetiously.
Yep.
I just really like punch club.
Punch club seems cool. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Again, if you were watching on Twitch, we know that the sound was not great. That's because we're in the middle of our still unbuilt
dental office.
There's Tim over there.
There's Tim.
There's all sorts. There's some cameras back here. Look at those cameras.
Giant speakers out there.
Some big old. Those aren't going to be in here. Sadly.
No, I think we don't need those.
Those are wooden speakers. They're dope, but they got moved. They used to be in the
lobby.
They
would blow this room apart, I think.
They would. I'm gonna do this right here.
But if you make this, it's going to be a well-oiled machine. It's going to be a fully
well-oiled
functioning...
room.
Yeah,
room.
Yeah, that's
well, well-oiled room. That's what we call it. Well, thank you so much for watching this week. We will be back on Monday with more. You can, as always, find everything we do at waypoint.vice.com, waypoint.zone, bazinga.zone, digitalpyramids.com, new.donk.city,
yeah.
twitter.com/waypoint. All of our videos go up on youtube.com/waypointvice.
Yes.
This week, Patrick played some Yakuza. You can go watch him do that. That was really...
He got a great achievement this week. That was...
Yeah, he got something, didn't he?
Good.
He got something. check that out. We have short form videos going up now every Tuesday, and soon there will be more to add to that. But Guide to Games has been going up every Tuesday. They're like little short 3-minute game crit videos. What else is going on, Danielle?
Oh, man. Well, we're going to actually be putting more stuff up during the weekend.
That's true.
Now, as well. So
do our best to.
You can keep looking.
Yes.
On our Twitter, on our Facebook.
Facebook.com/waypointvice. Where can people find you, Danielle?
They can find me on Twitter, Danielle R.I., and on Facebook, for some reason, if you want to find me on Facebook, I am Danielle Riendo, writer.
Awesome. And you, Tim.
You can find me on Twitter at TimBarnes451, the temperature at which jokes burn.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Is there like a stand-up special like I can link them to? Is there like a...
If they go to TimBarnesComedy.com, there should be just a quick video of me doing stand-up.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you so much.
I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. We will catch you on Monday. Until then, peace.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.